A noble vow, said Doran Martell with a faint smile. But you are only one man, sir. I had hoped that imprisoning my headstrong nieces would help calm the waters, but all they've done is drive the roaches back beneath the rushes. Every night I hear them whispering and sharpening their knives. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we thought it was best to rename and rebrand ourselves as the game did so with the second edition. Now, we are the White Book Podcast, and each week we bring you your dose of strategy, insight, and all-around geeky goodness. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, but more importantly to you, our listeners. Please consider supporting us on Patreon so that we can continue to make this show the best it can, and I promise we have big plans for the future. This is The White Book.
There's roaches in Westeros?
Evidently.
There's also potatoes. So it's not that medievally accurate, so.
And turnips, right?
Oh, man.
I still didn't listen to the Luke final episode. I'm scared to.
It's not that bad. It really isn't.
Yeah, you know.
I remember what I actually said on the episode, so I don't know what made it, and the light editing touch scares the crap out of me.
I mean, I definitely tried to trim something, but knowing it was a little different tone than usual, I was more lenient than I could.
Will had a very gentle hand. There's like one moment where it's really obvious that he cut like a huge swath of something you said.
I know,
but he did like
exactly what swath.
It's pretty light. You should just be glad you don't live in Canada. Or particularly the UK, because Alex Hines could definitely sue you for defamation.
I don't know anyone by
that's just based on the stuff I still left in the show.
I don't know anyone by that name. I don't know why I would talk bad about someone like who? Does a person by that name play Thrones? Because I know a person by that name doesn't have a podcast.
Oh, zinger.
Okay.
Oh, well. Obviously, this is the White Book, and I am Will, joined once again by Aaron, if listeners have not figured that one out. and Roy, who's always such a calming presence on the show.
Until I rile him up.
Yeah, he can definitely rile me up.
Oh, man.
Really? Roy up on this show?
You don't let it get that far. You mediate, but I've definitely gotten Roy actively angry on Second Sons.
There's been a couple of times I've been actively angry at Aaron in an episode. I was living in the closet at the time. The apartment in I know. Yeah, I remember a couple episodes that Aaron definitely got a little much. You know, but Aaron and I aren't talking every single day, seven times a day.
Because we're on different teams.
Because we're on different teams for Thrones War. So, like, I feel grateful every time I talk to Aaron currently. So, but back when once Thrones War is over, it's, you know, oh, God.
Thanks.
Too much.
Appreciate it.
Not again.
You know, I love you, Aaron.
Not bad. I don't give a shit. We've met.
Thrones War coming up soon.
It is. I'm excited.
Oh, well, but when people hear this, a week, right?
Yeah, a week, yeah.
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 Yeah. And then there's like a slew of big tournaments. Oh, there's actually a slew of big, I mean, Winds of Winter will have been over by the time this airs, which I'm going to this weekend as we record. And then we've got my tournament, Storming of Starpike at the beginning of March. Then we have Jesse's birthday tournament. Ooh. There's just like, there's a lot of stuff going on. So,
yeah, it feels like from what this next weekend running through to like May-ish, there's just a real pile of stuff.
It yeah, feels like- that, I mean, I'm not even counting European tournaments in what yeah. I just said, and there's a bunch. There's, right? So. Yeah, it's exciting. It's an exciting time to
I'm
be in the game.
I'm going to two yeah. of those. I really want to go to Wins, and I cannot figure out how to get my wife to let me. So, also, grades are due Monday, and I have this giant set of essays to hit. So,
well, you know, can you grade on long bus rides? So,
absolutely.
So then, no, yeah, it's gonna be hard. But there's always next year.
Yeah.
But the.
Oh, well. So, let's go ahead. Let's get into some of the other got going on. We
did you guys hear about the Bearer Box?
The Bearer Box? You know, I think I did hear about that. I was listening to a podcast and they said it was going to be the next box.
That's creepy.
They did. I know. That podcast is brilliant. They have the inside scoop. That Bearer Box is really, I bet it's going to blow people's socks off based on just what FFG kind of like hinted at. When they were talking to those podcast guys, that box, oof, gonna get people exactly what the community wants.
Sure,
I agree with the cut of Roy's jiv.
I do have one hell of a jib.
I think Will's about to give up on us. Just fucking hang up and do the podcast alone.
You know, I was just really trying to think of a good segue or just a nice callback. I had nothing.
But Will, the things you do for love. The things you do for love.
Are you guys trying to suggest I should just leave the white book to you?
You should do the white book on alternate weeks and start doing Second Sons randomly sometimes.
Yeah, you can always, you should come on Sons.
If you gave me a little more heads up than like, hey, you free in like an hour for the Second Sons? Then
it's about,
maybe
it's about how much planning we do for that cast.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that was a good week. That was good.
All right, so we should transition. Hey, Will.
Yeah.
I hear that today they announced the sixth pack, which is coming out in the second quarter of this year, which is coming before we know it. I feel like we just started the year, but the second quarter is coming super soon.
They spoiled something stupid from that, right?
Someone always tells. They tell us that the next pack is coming.
Oh, is that the plot cancel? I saw that on the Facebook group, and some people were like, it's not that good. I'd rather run this than that. And I was like, I think you guys understand what plot cancel means and how it works.
And event cancel. I mean, it's pretty flexible here.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it's so real quick. I'll just read the card for listeners. Someone always tells it's a 2-cost loyal Martell event. Interrupt. When the effects of an opponent's event or triggered plot ability would initiate, cancel those effects. This card is really good. I think it's really good because it's reliable event cancel, because like the most frustrating thing in the whole world is when you play Hand's Judgment on someone and then they just Hand's Judgment your Hand's Judgment. Like, I hate that so much. Yeah. I'm like, that's so annoying. And like this card is just like, look, if Martell has 2 gold, something Martell already wants to bluff considering the powerful effects they have sitting at 2 gold, you get to cancel that event. And plus, there's lots of powerful and also niche interactions with canceling plots. So I think that this is a card that controlling Martell decks, and I think actually maybe just all Martell decks, but a lot, or at least a lot of Martell decks, because aggro Martell would also like this. the ability to cancel a Valor would be ridiculous in an aggro deck. So
I mean, to not have to deal card. With a Doharis. And hey, is there some plot or some, sorry, agenda that lets you play extra plots that might like this?
Yeah, I
feel like that's a skill play, right? Like it's just like I'm going to run three things that get me that extra gold, and you know, dare you to Valor.
Yeah, and I think Martell kind of likes, like, theoretically likes calling the banners because of the initiative. Yeah. And so you may see it come back in because just the ability to be like, oh, I don't like this plot. Flip calling the banners. I get to choose who goes. But I mean, you're going to have to go first in that case, but whatever. Go first, cancel your plot, go fuck yourself. Like,
it's gen- and like if they play something else, it, the initiative is just like, all right, go second. I'll take all my gold. Thanks. Now I've got 800 tricks. You know what it's going to be absolutely fantastic and hilarious to cancel? Trade Routes.
Yes.
I'm going to get 13 gold. No, you're going to sit there with 2 and be sad.
Well, I mean, it's not even just that. You guys are just mentioning things that are triggering during the plot phase, which is going to be a bit more work to set up so that you actually have gold to play some of these tiles. But anything that's off triggering in some other phase, you know, your first snow of winters or what's the winter festival, things like that, it's going to take a lot less work to hit with this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, rains.
It destroys rains. That's awesome. Because Martella hates rains. Like that Greyjoy rains bullshit. It's like, no, thank you.
No, thank you. Yeah. You can even cancel whatever the Greyjoy plot is, the one that gives additional unopposed.
I was just thinking.
You can cancel that.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a very powerful. I could be wrong here, and Aaron, you and Will could correct me, but I think this is a card that's designed that screams play me, because I feel like if it was just 2 gold, cancel the effects of a triggered plot ability. It wouldn't see as much play because you would really have to build around it. But the fact that it also is like, oh, I can also cancel Dracaris. I can cancel Consuming Flames if plot cancel isn't part of the game plan that I need to play for this matchup. It's never really a dead card because there's almost always events that you're going to want to cancel. Unless you're playing against like a Night's Watch Rains that isn't running, but that's great in that matchup because you can cancel the Rains thing. So it's just a card that literally putting it in a deck, it always has a use, is super strong. Like, this is going to be in a lot of Martell decks.
So, especially Mono Martell, right? Like, where you have that extra space to play with, and they have a box. So, like, Mono Martell, which is already probably my favorite deck, if not my second favorite deck, is Martell Wolfio. Like it just gets stronger. It's just so good. Like, and Water Gardens, right? Like,
yeah, I was about to say Water Gardens. Water Gardens makes it like you can always bluff this in the challenges phase is real powerful.
Yeah, yeah. Just the challenges phase. It's worth pointing out that that timing does not work for the plot phase, unfortunately.
Nope.
No more pre-plot action.
This would be busted with a pre-plot action window.
Oh, yeah. Oh, so bad.
But yeah, it's a very, very strong card. I'm glad it's in Martell and not in Lannister, which might be the other faction that could get something like this. So it's very, very powerful. And it really just says that, look, this 2018, could be the year of Martell, because we're getting really strong Martell cards in this cycle so far, and of course they have a box incoming, and boxes always mean good things for the faction that they get that gets them.
Oh yeah. Even if the initial build is maybe not super obvious. I feel like there was a bit of lag time when the Lanny box dropped, when people were really surprised at the...
Can we get a Bolt box?
What's that?
Can we get a Bolton box?
Yeah. That, like, reboots Stark a little?
Like, Boltons are all fun, but there's, like, 3 of them.
Yeah.
There are literally three of them.
That isn't three is like three. It is more like three than any other number.
I'm betting late this cycle or next cycle we suddenly get a lot of them. Won't we be getting Feast for Crows time?
After the Barrow box, we are officially getting the Bolton box. Will just spoiled it.
Wait, isn't this cycle Feast for Crows?
I think this is early Feast, right? I think aren't they doing kind of like two cycle? Like didn't they say they were starting to stretch it out?
Isn't Feast the one where Targ isn't even in it?
But Martell wouldn't have been in the first two cycles did that.
Why is Targ getting super OP shit? Because Martell got trash in the first two cycles.
Except Nymeria.
Sure.
Yeah, but there are a couple other cards that I think are probably worth us talking about. So there's a Greyjoy, 2/1 military and power icon, non-loyal, Saltcliff Sailor. She has bestow 3. Each character you control with 1 or more gold gains stealth. Action, move 1 gold from Saltcliff Sailor to a Greyjoy character you control. I think she's really powerful simply because she turns all of your bestow characters into characters with stealth. So Begging Brother is already a card Greyjoy kind of likes. Begging Brothers are 2 or 3 strength? 3 strength, right?
3?
Yeah, like a 3 strength power intrigue bicon that can also cancel.
There's the Neely military icon, the one that kneels locations, that's really good, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's Wex, like putting 1 gold on.
Stealth on him, too.
Call him by his proper name, Sexy Wexy.
What's the
Sexy Wexy?
What's the army with Village?
Oh yeah,
it's already
Silence's crew.
Yeah, already crazy cost efficient.
Yeah, but it's also like there's like interesting interactions with Banner, like Greyjoy Banner something for other factions Banner cards or not Banner, excuse me, other factions bestow cards, because any bestow card you control has it. It's not just the Greyjoy cards. So yeah, it's cool. She's a good card.
Yeah, I think she's really fun. Even like bare minimum, the 2/1 bicon feels like something that Greyjoy is interested in. Two cost, 1 strength is what I meant there. I'm tempted, against some houses to say, even if I'm tight on gold and I'm just spending 3 total just to put a gold on her, that 3 for a stealthy bicon's not terrible.
I agree.
The art, though. I gotta bring it up on the show, too. It's not that I hate it. It's not that I think it's bad art. I think it's actually quite good. I really like it for a completely unrelated card game. Very, very bizarre. I saw somebody in the comments on Facebook post a GIF from Batman Beyond, and then it finally clicked to me that, yes, that's why this feels weird. It has that kind of like perspective and limb angles and such. This is like Saltcliff Sailor, the Bruce Timm edition.
Yeah, but she does have the House Saltcliff logo on her little like belt wrap thing. So it is clearly art that like the artist did their research. So I don't know. I mean the art's like not necessarily, I like this style actually, so I wouldn't mind seeing some more art from this. It's like a change of pace from a lot of the other art. You know, compared to the like crappy like overwashed Image Comics art that is the Sept and Celador art here that we have here. Like, I'd rather have whatever this artist did versus this couldn't get work working for Valiant Comics art that this guy's got. So,
hey, dude, Valiant's awesome. Don't be a jerk.
Yeah, but their art isn't really, artists aren't always the best.
But I had similar thoughts about Celador. But what appears to be a Tully army back there and the Martell army, both of those actually look pretty cool.
Well, the host of the Bone Way was spoiled, which is this is a 6-cost military intrigue, 4-strength, non-loyal army from Martell, has Intimidate, no attachments. Host of the Bone Way gets +1 strength for each plot card in your use pile. Aaron, you're the Martell player. What do you think?
I got distracted and wasn't listening.
Host of the Bone Way, Intimidate, 4-strength, military intrigue, army. Gets +1 strength for each plot in its use pile.
Non-unique.
6-cost. Non-unique, of course.
No attachments?
No attachments, yeah, always.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. Not the best thing I've ever seen, but that's pretty good.
Non-unique, Intimidate is pretty interesting.
It's got good good icons for that Intimidate. Intimidate intrigue is pretty nice against certain factions.
Yeah. And against
Night's Watch.
Not great again.
So it's a way to make let them force you go second, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the goal. Seems good.
I mean, and
good.
And it's not terrible going second either. No? A lot of times you can still...
You can guarantee dominance and stuff.
Or, yeah, or dominance or something.
Yeah, or you can use it to go first to close out a game. It's, yeah. I think most Martell decks, it seems these days, have no problem deciding initiative order. So, yeah, it's an interesting card. Flexible. There's one more, though, which Will and I were joking about, which is Septon Celador. Are you listening, Aaron? He's a 4-cost, yeah. Loyal, intrigue icon, 2-strength. Challenge action, kneel Septon Celador to choose an opponent. That player must choose and discard a character from his or her hand unless he or she reveals a card containing, or excuse me, a hand containing no characters.
That's good.
Yeah. I wish he was 3-strength.
I don't really like that design space, but that's good.
I mean, the 2-strength isn't great, but I'm kneeling him several turns, I think, anyway, rather than throwing him in a challenge. I mean, it makes him, the 2 versus 3 makes him more vulnerable to Laws of Pride, I suppose, but, or sorry, Laws of Punishment.
Yeah, well, but I was thinking more about Venomous Blade, which is the most frustrating card to play against as a Night's Watch player. It's just like paying 4 gold and then him getting Venomous Bladed. I mean, and then if it's in the marshalling phase, then you cry. At least in the challenges phase, you can use his ability and then he dies. But if it happens in the marshalling phase, you're like, oh.
Well, you just blow your Amon save, right?
Yeah, that's true.
I think Roy might have just blown something else on it.
No. Yeah, you know me. I love these cards. Yeah, I think it's strong. But I do think it's weak in a matchup that you really want his ability, which is again Martell. Yeah, because just knowing that Martell has no characters or forcing them to chuck what they were going to bring into play for a hand that's mostly events and forcing them to chuck their Nymeria that they were going to put in to play with Ariane, particularly if they made you first and this is your first challenges action. Yeah, it's good.
I mean, even if they bounce Nymeria in and then you're just like, I'm just going to chuck your Ariane. That's so goddamn good.
Yeah, it's good. Or, yeah, we're against bouncing Ariane. If you don't bounce this guy, Ariane, that Ariane could leave your hand, is all kinds of stuff. Or force her to stay on the board because they need to bounce a more impactful character. It's yeah, but then Venomous Blade makes you cry.
You know, I just realized something. You know, so many people used to complain about Heads on Spikes, and then they were okay with it, then they complained about it again. Septon Celador is an anti-Heads on Spikes card. Who's going to bother to run him and Heads on Spikes? Nobody. You're already emptying their hand of characters. Perfect.
I hate Heads on Spikes.
I think you might write and run Heads on Spikes in this card in like a Night's Watch, like stag, blow up their hand deck.
I can see that.
Yeah, that's just like, I'm going to make you have no more than, preferably 0 cards, but no more than like 1 to 2 cards in your hand every turn. And I think this guy definitely goes in that deck. And I think that it may, like, it may...
Maybe you want Dom Mel for that?
Yeah. But there's Martell Stag decks that do it, so... I don't, you know, and don't get to run Dom Mel. So it's just really the Seed in Flames that you want. I mean, I think Dom Mel is like icing on the cake.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not really my kind of style, kind of deck. But I definitely could see some degenerate people like Buzz or CT playing that kind of deck.
You know what the really amusing thing to me is when you first said that. I immediately thought of Buzz Hannon. I thought you were calling him degenerate, which gave me a nice chuckle inside. And then I realized, wait a minute. You mean Andre?
Buzz Hannon just isn't degenerate.
Right, that's why it made me laugh.
Like, he is the most upstanding motherfucker I know.
He is definitely an upstanding young gentleman. Yeah, so...
I like my phraseology better.
These are some powerful spoilers, so.
Yeah. I'm excited about this pack. I suppose... That sends us on to topic number two for the week. We're, I'm so confused at how far we actually are into store championship season this year, since it was kind of a cluster to get started, so to speak. How far are we? A quarter of the way?
Nominally, it started the weekend after Worlds, so... We're pretty far in then. November, December, January, soon, but this will come out in February, so 4 months in, technically. But really, like, a month, because most store championships seem to have started in January.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of folks held off on actually scheduling until they knew the season was starting, and FFG kind of announced it after the fact by a couple weeks.
Well, the kits also went out late, so...
Kind of a mess, but... Realistically speaking, we're, what, maybe a third of the way through by the time this episode launches? Something like that.
Sure.
Far enough that we've got a little bit of experience to talk about. That's what I was getting at.
See that?
Okay.
Yeah?
You know how I know Aaron's not paying attention to the podcast anymore? He's agreeing with me. Congenially.
We're right. Right. I'm fucking not agreeing with you again this episode. It's a decision you could make if you really want to.
Uh-oh. That's going to bite me.
Yeah. Yep. Man, Targ is good. Targ sucks ass. You suck.
It might be worse.
Targ's the worst
faction. Just to get Aaron on record saying that the Targ sucks ass.
Well, Aaron is not a fan of how Targ plays anyway, so...
Wow. Right now, I'm not sure I am either, but I've been playing. What is relevant here to drop our stats on for the Annals? I defaulted to the first of the year to chit-chat and take a look at, since we've had a new pack recently, but... I could be convinced to look further or closer if you guys think it's more.
I went to the Archmaester's Key, the first pack of the cycle, and then sort of looked at things. But we can do it from the first of the year, from date January 1. Okay, let me change it over. All right, well, that does change the data.
Yeah, I was
a little bit. Like, Lannister has not, or Night's Watch. Don't show up at all as qualified at all. So no in Jousting Pavilion, no Night's Watch or Lannister.
Oh,
deck.
Wait a minute. What competitive level, right?
I did all competitive levels.
Oh, this is thrilling radio, guys.
Why are my stats coming up differently?
All right. Anyway, this is competitive. Will, why don't you just give us your stats and That's what we'll do.
Okay. Well, the stats as I had them pulled. Now I'm worried I forgot to flip a switch somewhere. But it was showing that like Night's Watch was hitting 8% in the cut. Lannister at 8%. So that's something. I mean,
yeah, I've got Lannister at 9 now. I think I fixed it.
Okay.
Lannister at 9 and Night's Watch at 8.
Okay, for winners.
Hey, guys, you know why Lanny's not good right now?
Why?
You really don't know?
No, I'm asking for radio, yeah. Aaron.
Tell me
why.
Oh, okay. They haven't gotten good cards in like 3 cycles, mm-hmm. and the game is power creeped.
I do feel like.
Like, while they were, like, if
power creep is a real thing.
Cards stayed at the same. If cards stayed at the same level, they'd still be really good, right? Because they were so much better than everyone. But not only did everything catch up to their power level, things just got better.
Yeah. I mean, in some of those old houses, like Tyrell, that was, you know, kind of derided for a while there early in the game, that power...
Because their cards were awful.
...has really pushed them up there and kind of cemented them up there. I mean... The big thing I see...
They gave Tyrell every Lannister theme. Every single one.
Yeah, they basically have now at this point.
Not Clansmen.
Well, there you go. I suppose we'll leave him a trait. But I mean, the kind of the big quick thing I noticed looking at these stats, if I'm looking at winners and cut by faction, it's almost exactly the same. That Tyrell, Martell, Greyjoy, and Targaryen are the top four and account for basically 80% of the field between just the four of them.
So wait. You're going to tell me the four good houses are good?
Hey, you were arguing earlier before we recorded, I think, or earlier in this one, that Martell was not so hot, but I think
Martell is my favorite. I just don't think they get played as much.
They actually get paid pretty close to the level Greyjoy is getting played right now. Martell.
But you're not looking since Asha came out.
Well, we can't. Asha came out 2 weeks ago, so we can't super measure it yet. So, but yeah, I mean that's certainly true. But like Greyjoy and Martell are floating around right now in participants, faction, cuts, and winning. You know, they're within a couple percentage points of each other. About two to five percentage points of each other, which is pretty close. Same with Targ and Tyrell. They're floating in the same sort of, same sort of level. So it looks like the top two are very much like people just gravitate right to Tyrell and Targ. And then right below them is an equal number of people are gravitating towards Martell and Greyjoy, which doesn't really surprise me because the two best factions against Tyrell and Targaryen are in many ways Martell and Greyjoy. So it sort of makes sense that these, it's like the predator, that's like the champ decks, and then the predators of those champ decks are sort of why they're the top four. And I think Greyjoy just gets better
and
now.
And those two champ decks you mentioned, the Tyrell and Targaryen, I think are the two factions with pretty much hands down the best card advantage at the moment, which doesn't really surprise me that they've filtered to the top in that case.
Greyjoy has. Cool. An unfucking believable card.
Well, now with Asha, but we haven't seen that full effect filter out yet. Or filter in, I suppose.
Here's the thing, Will. I disagree with you a little bit. So I think that the reason Tyrell is in the top factions is it has more card advantage than anyone. I think it's Targaryen, it's not card advantage, it's action advantage. So it's not necessarily that Targ will just outdraw you and necessarily out resource you in that way, but it will be able to do more with its resources than any other faction.
Targ really good?
Burn?
Not yet. Well, yes, but specifically in that dupes are this huge variance problem for everyone but them.
Yeah.
That's true. If they really want to get rid of a character, they can do that.
Yeah. And like everyone else, like if they see that dupe and that extra thing, you're just like, all right, well, that's going to be here for a while.
Well, not necessarily everybody. I mean, I think Martell Bounce can shoot through those pretty quickly.
I mean, Martell, no, not really. Like, it takes a little while.
I mean, Gaston cannot be saved.
Yeah, just don't use it on attack.
I finally got around to try and lock the tower over the weekend and was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I don't think
it's good against Mace.
Mace is possibly my least favorite card right now.
He's up there, yeah.
Like, he's so uninteractive, and like they gave so many stupid little combos to his stupid non-interactive ass that I can't do anything about but sit and watch, because there's not a cancel for him or anything except fucking Big Brother. And like even then, it still fucking works, right?
Tretch. Yeah, I mean, like you just go all in: 3 Treachery, 3 Begging Brother, 3 Nightmares, and 3 Milk of the Poppy. There you go.
Nightmares doesn't really do anything to him. He just does it the next turn.
I mean, he does slow him down, right? I think. And if you hit him in the challenges in the marshalling phase, that can hurt. Like if that's your first action, they like kneel their reducer and then you hit him, it can be pretty powerful.
Yeah. You know what the dumbest thing in the world is? How that shit works is attachment control too.
Yes.
I finally slowed down Tinder Marge and I'm getting back. Oh.
Aaron, having played a lot of Night's Watch recently, yes. You'd be surprised in Night's Watch games how many attachments end up on Mace.
No, I wouldn't.
It's like,
did you not remember that game I played at the regional? At the regional, at the store championship, where like he had Mace and I was just like, George, here's all the attachments on Mace. And he was like, wait, what? I was like, I just don't want him to
move. I mean, he's the only character that can take them consistently once Mace is on the board. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Yeah, no.
Why did you put 3 attachments on Mace? Because I hate him. I just don't want him to move. He can sit there. You can kill him if you want to.
Yeah, and I think
like, and Terrell didn't need him. Like, if that was a Barra card, like, yeah, that's annoying. Like,
oh, Barra.
Come on, man.
No, like, no. With Crescent, you cannot have Mace and Crescent easily in the same faction, because like Milk is the only consistent answer to him.
Well, Barra right? needs something. Like, come on, give him something. I mean. Mace totally borks with their Neil. Plaza totally borks with their Neil. Like they're kind of dead in the water against the two biggest factions.
He should he shouldn't exist, but if he had to exist, he's a Barra card.
Sure. I just don't. I think Mace is interesting on himself, but I think there's just him and Hightower. It's just a problem. It gets very frustrating because it's the one gold. Why isn't it gain a gold or draw a card? It's gain a gold and draw a card, which is super frustrating.
It's the best tempo in the game.
It really is.
It's the second best tempo in the game.
Well, particularly because it's not limit once per round.
It's
or kneel your faction card. So Tyrell players can consistently do it, particularly the Bitterbridge deck. Can consistently do it 3 times in a single round.
Four.
Where's the plot? Marshalling.
You do plot, then
marshalling
when
challenges.
You marshal something, then challenges, then you can use Mace and challenges and get that extra power. Like you just ambush something in a challenges. It's not like you can't.
Oh, yeah, that's
true. Or flea bottom.
It doesn't have a limit, right? No, it's once per round or phase, right?
Yes.
I'm pretty.
So you just don't use Mace in. Challenge.
You don't use Mace in the marshalling.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can get 4 power per turn pretty easily.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah, that's true.
5 if you get that other stupid location out.
Oh, Old Town?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, those decks can go real fast.
I know.
And they're high variance, right? Because like
if you see
decks,
it, have fun.
Particularly if you're packing Milk. You need to see 2 Milks, and most decks you can mulligan and relatively consistently get that Milk on the first turn, or by the second turn to get Mace. But then they're going to confiscate it away, so you got to find that second one, and finding that second one can sometimes be very troublesome.
Yeah, right.
So
all around, I can totally see what you're talking.
Unless you've got Asha, to just keep digging for it. There we go. Right, full circle.
Now, this is one of those things. This is where Greyjoy is very strong, I think, against Tyrell. But the Tyrell, particularly because the Bitterbridge deck, the only faction that has more bullshit characters than Tyrell is Greyjoy. and get letting Greyjoy put Euron into play for free is not fun for the Tyrell player.
Yeah.
So, and put Asha into play for free, also not fun for the Greyjoy player, or either Asha, but it's usually going to be big Asha now. Or Balon, like just like it, the faction that has such a powerful top end that is consistently played, is Greyjoy, and that just the ability, because it lets them keep that tempo up, and so Greyjoy is a really, so number one thing, if you are seeing a lot of Tyrell in like the first star championship went to, and you got rolled by a Bitterbridge deck, you got rolled by Tyrell Summer, and just play Greyjoy as the answer to that. It has the most consistent answers, and Asha just makes it more consistent. Right, Aaron?
I mean, so I don't think Greyjoy even has more than one good deck necessarily, or more than one T1, like, aces deck. But adding Asha to Greyjoy Reigns is just this level of consistency that's completely absurd. Like, Euron and Asha might be the two... I mean, I guess there's Mace. And then there's Second Sons and Fleabottom. But, like, every house but Martell has just this annoying combo that doesn't let you do shit once you get it going, right? Like, it's really frustrating. Like, you either break that combo or you just might as well...
Wait, who doesn't have this?
Martell.
Martell can get a lockdown that's really...
Martell can get a really annoying lockdown, but it has to, like, use different cards. Like, it's not, like... Greyjoy just gets Asha or Euron for a bunch of saves, and then you're like, all right, well, this is going to go well for me. You know what I mean?
And like, oh, I know what you mean, Aaron.
Like, Targ gets their, like, a burn card Fleabot, or a stand Fleabottom and a Second Sons, and you're like, this is going to be a long game. And Tyrell gets High Garden, and oh my god, how does Tyrell get High Garden with my turn one in every game I play against them? I don't understand. Every game. I haven't played a Tyrell match where they don't get it turn one in, like, months.
Yeah, it's pretty frustrating.
But, like, if they just get that, you're just like, what are you gonna do? Like, either you have an answer that you draw on too quickly, or you're just gonna watch them win slowly. Martell doesn't do that. It has to sort of artificially put that together.
Yeah, I mean, Martell, you can still go too fast for Martell, right? Particularly if it doesn't see all of its answers right away. You can get to the point where your victory can sort of become inevitable even when Martell begins to flip the game, which Tyrell, oof, this E double L sound that Martin likes a lot makes it difficult when talking about them. Now that, as you said, right, Aaron, you can gain like 5 power around, which means you only need, without any plot trickery, without any Roybar Royces or whatever, or renown from the million renowned characters that Tyrell has, they only need 3 rounds if they see Mace on the first turn and Mace in Old Town, right? So,
it's what do you, like, Tyrell is the least interactive of the I just ran your face over. I hope you enjoyed me running your face over. But, like, there's still not, like, hey, man, Greyjoy and Targ have to kneel their cards to do what Tyrell just randomly does. But, like, that's not really much more of a cost, right?
No.
Yeah.
Well, Greyjoy and Targ sort of cancel each other out, and then Tyrell sits there and is like, I gained power again.
Yeah, I think Targ, what's so interesting is about Targ, having played against Targ a lot recently.
Something's interesting
about playing Targ. Against Targaryen is what I think Targ is more targetable than Greyjoy or Tyrell, because, like, Targaryen, if you have Isle of Ravens in your deck, like, Sandy is absolutely right. Like, Isle of Ravens and just shuffling those Second Sons in is just, like, just destroys them. And, like, as long as you, like, if you also try to play the long game against Targaryen, which is generally, like, survive their pressure, like, force them to have it, right? Like, it's just like, okay, I'm going to play carefully. I'm only going to do the challenges I need to keep up with you to and sort of just make them have it while you're also preventing them from doing this Fleabottom nonsense, which is not difficult for a lot of factions to do. Stark can do that really well. Night's Watch can do that really well. You know, Martell can do that really well. You just sort of, you know, you're going to have to eat a couple Dracarises on important characters, but you just sort of keep that kind of like steady, slow pressure without letting Targaryen, giving Targaryen the opportunity to swing the game by overcommitting or pushing too hard. You can sort of just wear Targ decks down, except for Crossing. Crossing can just go too fast for you. But against the Fealty, the heavy burn decks, the HRD punishment decks, the like slower tempo-y Targ decks, they really don't like that game plan. And most people I see, at least, both on the Iron Throne and looking at store championship stuff, are not really going to Crossing, even though it just won the World Championship and did really well at Red Saturday. They're going to Fealty.
Most people play shit Targ decks.
I know, though. But Targ Fealty and Targ HRD Punishment are not shit decks. They're good decks.
I think Targ HRD Punishment is, like, look, it's better than any Stark deck, for example. I might know. But, like, compared to Fealty and Crossing, it's shit, and it's significantly worse than Reigns.
Yeah, okay. So let's say, but Targ Fealty is a legit good deck, right? Can we at least?
I think Targ Fealty is probably still the best deck against
Fealty. There's ways to play around Targ Fealty in a way that I feel like when the Tyrell deck gets going or the Greyjoy just like does Greyjoy stuff to you, it feels a little bit.
Inevitable
in a way that's really frustrating. Like Targ is really frustrating when I once played against that had three Drax and two Consuming Flames in the first three turns. I mean, I still won this game because they had no cards in their hand, but I was just like, oh my god. Like I was looking at his discard pile and I kept just cycling the second sun. So while he was burning my characters, he couldn't really do very many challenges. And you know, I eventually grinded him out, but it's just like, oh my god, there's just so much kill here. Right? That's really frustrating, but there's things to do about it. But like when Mace gets going, and if you don't have those milks, like it's even worse than in some ways. It's even worse than losing a Hyper Viper. Hyper Viper is at least crazy. It's like, oh my god, his strength is 200, and now he's doing a challenge. The sort of slow strangulation, the freezing to death that like that Tyrell can do is very frustrating.
I mean, can combo beat regular old Mace Tyrell?
Yeah, that's an interesting question.
That is not a matchup I've explored. Tentatively, I think combo stands a shot. The Mace deck isn't actively disrupting that a lot.
No, because you're giving away too much unopposed power.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? Because
they just rush your face.
Right, the old strategy for like Greyjoy Crossing, right, is just like do three challenges, heads on spikes, try to get the Viper away and just, you know, just rush them down. And, you know, giving free power away to a Tyrell player. So now they're not only just claiming, let's not even be the 4 or 5 power max. Let's say they're just getting 3 power through Mace shenanigans, but then also giving them an additional 3 power from unopposed and sometimes an additional power for dominance. Like a Mace deck can go to 6 power in one turn pretty easily. And then if it really tries to just crank, if it wants to, you know, move from gear 3 to gear 2, it can do that and then, you know, get one character with renown or like if Standy Randy, you know, it's going to win, I think, too fast for a lot of combo. Maybe not Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman could.
Tyrell has a lot of renown.
Yeah, they do.
Huh?
It's,
which is weird because they only have like 2 characters in the book who are renowned at all.
Randall, the Knight of Flowers, Renly, if you count him as a Tyrell character, they're all famous.
Sort of.
Renly's not really renowned.
He's the brother of the king. Yeah. Oh, yeah, Garland was well known.
And the, like, I mean, Sans the Knight of Flowers before himself he... admitted
yeah, but
Garland,
like, yeah,
was,
no,
was it Garland was that... the better lance than him? I forget.
Better sword fighter. Better sword. Like, he's better at, like, in an actual battle than... Okay. The Knight of Flowers is.
And
Garland won the battle as Renly's ghost, which became known after the fact. So I think that earned him quite a bit of renown.
Yeah, but I mean, I think like renown as a thematic concept makes sense as a theme for Tyrell, right? Because they love the like knightly culture, and part of knightly culture is promoting yourself in that way. But excluding theme, what's I think so powerful about Tyrell renown is it's spread out throughout the cost curve. So it's not just that your 6 and 7 cost characters have renown. It's like, oh, you've got these 4 cost knights. You got this like pseudo renown 3 cost dude that gets a power every time. you know, a summer plot comes in, like, is revealed. Like, there's just, like, a lot of ways to gain power throughout the cost curve, which creates redundancy for the theme. And I think it's the only faction that really has that kind of redundancy in Renown. And that's one of the things that makes Tyrell really strong. So it has, like, multiple
outs. That's so interesting to me in comparing that to first edition history, as many listeners hate. Just, you know, Baratheon was that faction, first edition. And for, what, 90% of first edition's lifetime, couldn't hit...
Probably more than that.
Yeah, couldn't hit this competitive strength that Tyrell has in second edition. So I think in a lot of ways that shows the strength of giving them the card draw and the income advantage to go with all that power gain.
I think that's a function of the game being different too. Shit was just harder to keep on the board back then.
That's true. That is true.
Yeah.
Like Valor Morghulis is kind of fucking terrible.
I'm definitely fine. I don't play it nearly as often. But more importantly, I know the decks that are playing it are built specifically to try to use it, which means I don't have to expect it in every matchup. Probably only maybe a quarter of them, which really frees up my play.
The game still suffers from stagnant boards, right?
So you don't think Valor Do'Harris was the magic bullet you wanted it to be?
I think it's still really good. I think it's probably the best reset in the game. But
it's helped. But, it's definitely helped.
Like, there's so many fucking big guys that it's not terribly difficult to just reflood.
Yeah. Weirdly, I find myself coming back to Wildfire these days.
Once in a while. I feel like not often, once in a while. I feel like counting might have been a bad decision for the game.
Counting coppers. Interesting. Tell me more. Just have ubiquitous neutral draw.
Like, it goes in every deck. You don't really need nearly as much in-deck draw. And, like, it makes these big dude decks just so easily consistent.
Yeah. I think the
problem... Like, you just shoot out your hand... redraw, they reset, shit out your hand again, and you're like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I think, though, the problem in with counting, getting rid of it, so say to just...
I don't know if you can
get rid of it, because I feel like the game is balanced around its existence as a core set card, which is like, so if you got rid of it, say we restricted it or banned it or whatever, certain factions, I mean, you play Stark all the time, right? Like, certain factions just would completely not be able to draw cards in a good and consistent way, like Targ, Stark.
Yeah, but like it would
Lannister
be good
to a lesser to Lannister, right? Like, I don't.
The problem is only two and a half houses have any real draw, right? I mean, three now. Okay, three.
Tyrell, Night's Watch,
Tyrell, and Night's Watch are the big two. Martell has a fair amount.
It's solid. Yeah. Like, it's got.
And it's got a decent amount of insight. And then Greyjoy, because Asha's
Asha, yes.
And Raider exists and stuff. Yeah. But like,
and yeah. Then Great Kraken. Let's not forget Great Kraken.
Great Kraken, Reader, Asha, and general little bullshit. It's enough. So, but like,
its draw is about where it should be. I think actually, all factions should have about as much draw as Greyjoy does, except for Asha.
I think Night's Watch needs significantly less draw. I think it's too easy for whatever you want to do with their deck to happen.
I don't 100% agree with you about that.
Because you like them?
No, not just because I like them, because I've been testing them a lot. I mean, they are more consistent. I mean, I definitely agree.
The second most consistent house.
The second most consistent house would draw. But
the second most consistent house, period, where they do what they want. Sometimes what they want still doesn't win because their cards aren't as good as the other houses.
That's true.
Always.
Because, I mean, I think...
But, like, if you want a card, you just fucking find it.
Yeah, except the wall, when you really, really want it. Sometimes you just can't find it. Not speaking from personal bitterness at all from there. But yeah, no, I understand your point. Like, I do think Night's Watch draw is really strong, and it's one of the things that attracts people to the Night's Watch house. Like, the fact that you can generally have cards in Night's Watch just feels good, right? Like, it's one of the things, it's one of the reasons, like, I enjoy playing Night's Watch is that you can, you see cards without, like, having played Stark so much in second edition. You don't feel like you're struggling for cards ever.
See, and here's the thing. Even with all that drawn Night's Watch, even with all that drawn Tyrell, you still generally play counting.
Mm-hmm. Because it's five cards.
Like, so here's my claim. Well, it's three cards because you're going to get two either way.
Right, but you see five new cards that turn. Like, yeah. Powerful.
So here's my claim. Second edition, counting coppers is to first edition as was Valor.
I think that might be true. I mean, I think it's format defining. Particularly now that Econ is
omnipresent, it's format defining. It helps determine, like, your deck's gonna run it when you play it, how you play it, and what you're using it for, sort of what determines what your deck does. Like, Night's Watch is using it for a different reason than Tyrell is using it for a different reason than Greyjoy is definitely using it for a different reason than Targ. And Stark and Barrett just use it because they don't have any good cards. They have to be like, I just need something.
Need cards. Well, Barrett still has. Decent draw.
Does he?
I don't think so.
I think the Red Keep is not near.
I mean, it's gotten worse over time, but. No, I'm just used to it. I mean, I to be honest, this is one of the things I was looking at my data. I have played against so little Braavian over the course of the last year that it's hard to think. I'm not good at assessing their cards anymore. So this is one of the things that's good about Thrones War. I'm guaranteed to play at least one game against a Barra deck in a competitive setting.
I've played a lot of Barra.
I played against a lot of less than stellar Barra decks on Iron Throne, but I feel like that hasn't told me anything about Braavians.
LGB is wandering around playing a million games with everyone.
Yeah, he is definitely testing.
Just play him. He's good. Barra's good, but like, I still don't think. Like, Red Keep's good in one specific deck, but like, I just don't think it's an especially good draw card. And I think tying all the other draw to dominance is stupid and annoying.
Yeah.
I guess they've also got Atmel's Insight. There's that.
Yeah. But hang on. You're playing Greyjoy, and you play Counting Coppers. When do you play it? Why do you play it? What are you looking for?
Saves, if I haven't drawn them. I'm looking to refill after my opponent's Valor, Morghulis, or Doharis.
Do I need to refill after Morghulis?
Right before your own, right? Because you want the dupe before it.
Right before it, yeah. I'm looking to close, so it's a good plot right before you go into your closing plot, right? Because you have five cards to look at instead of two.
So in Watch, I'm just going to answer, you're using it usually to get your draw going, to figure out what combo you want. Because Night's Watch, whether it be the Wall, or whether it be Wolf, or whether it be Rangers, is ultimately setting up a combo.
That's interesting, because the way I use counting when I'm playing wall decks is I use it to... I mean, obviously, sometimes you just use it, as you're saying, to like just set your combo up if you don't draw your pieces. But it's usually fine to find either your board presence that you need to make your combo work or the locations you need to make your combo work. And you need counting to sort of... Once you've got one of those two elements set up, to give you the other element. So more commonly, it's like... The first couple turns I spend setting up the wall and the wall shenanigans, depending on the matchup. Like against Greyjoy, I focus more on board presence, but the general matchups. And then I'll flip into counting to get some characters in my hand and then, you know.
Yeah, I try and use counting to set up extra draw because I know that once I have enough draw, like I know exactly what I'm looking for and exactly what I need to be doing.
Yeah, no, that's a totally valid way to do it.
So in Targ, what are you using it for?
To fuel your effects.
To fuel your discard shit, right? Like specifically, just fuel the 500 weight to your discarding card. In Tyrell, what are you using it for?
To get the bullshit.
Yeah, to get the bullshit. You want the specific.
Like you're using to get your combo.
You're using it to get your combo, but more you're using it to just see, like, because Tyrell has four combos, right? Like, you're using it to get renown and see if you can get one of them.
And repeating. It's even more powerful in Bitterbridge.
So, yeah. Right. Right. But even without Bitterbridge, like, you're setting up either Tinder Marge or Renly bullshit or Randall bullshit or Mace bullshit. So you're just trying, like, and when you get all of them going, the game's just over, right? Like, unless they do Harris. But generally, you just want to get one of those renowned trains going, if or two. So, like, you're saying, okay, which combo am I setting up? And that's what you use it for. Martell, use it for control, almost exclusively, right? I'm running short on control effects. Most of them aren't repeatable. Most of them are one-shot. So I need to go find more control. Like, what you use it for is the house identity, as much as anything else. And I don't know what Lannister uses it for. Lannister also, I think Lannister's just bad cards now
too. Just needs cards. Same with Stark.
Like Lannister and Stark just don't have good cards. Lannister, Stark, and Baratheon don't have good cards. So they just are like, I just need to see something. I'm probably going to lose. Give me some cards.
Yeah. I mean, I think the point the Counting Coppers was also designed with the original innate design philosophy for second edition of Econ being like the primary way in which cards are constrained. So making it two gold really, I think early on was a legitimate drawback for a bunch of factions.
Still is for the bad ones.
For the bad ones, right? For Stark in particular, really struggles and with it. But now that Econ is largely broken, and I feel like with Gaze of the Moon, it's like almost there for most of the factions. And if there's a few more Econ cards, it will definitely.
We need an unlimited economy. Like, badly.
Well, I mean, I agree with you that we need an unlimited economy because I prefer, I mean, I prefer the basic philosophy that I think you've articulated here, which is, but we're complaining about Counting Coppers and its strength here, but which is more fun to draw cards and play them. And so I feel like, though, if we do get
even more than that, like, it's specifically not fun to just, like, lose a game because you didn't see any economy. And that can still happen. But the math is wrong for between 9 to 60, right? Like, you're still just not seeing economy too often. Like, it has to be, like, 12, and that means you need unlimited to not just completely die in a bunch of games.
But
I don't know.
I think if Danny prints non-limited economy, or he continues to print lots of economy, I think that will bring in a restricted list. And I don't mean this like, I don't mean this in like, because it's just going to need to rein in some of the weight, because some of effects in the game were balanced by the fact that the economy was limited. And the fact that the design direction of the game has changed since then needs just some pulling back in. And I think Counting is one of those cards that Danny is going to need to re-examine. Should he choose to print non-limited economy? Should he continue to sort of flood the economic world, particularly print powerful neutral economy like Great Halls, like Gates of the Moon? It's definitely some of these effects that were balanced around economy need to be reined in through a restricted list, a ban list, or errata, the like no one loves that, like just a way
I like
could just give like okay, so you made that argument for renown in Tarot, right? Like all those cards that have renown, who's more well known than the Hound? Like no one, right? Like
Jamie?
The Hound is one of the most well-known people. Yeah, right. But like Garland isn't.
No,
you know, like the Hound is ridiculously
famous. But renown is not just
like there's like seven Lannister.
There's an also an aspect of respect and well regarded that goes with it.
No one respects Renly.
Yeah,
that's not true. Tons of people
respect
Renly. He was like. I think the show's interpretation of Renly isn't coloring your memory of Baron, Renly is in the books.
Then why isn't Littlefinger renowned? Besides, we don't want neutral renowned. Like, there's enough famous people that are well-respected.
But Littlefinger isn't famous until...
Joffrey is 100%.
I think he should be renowned. I really think
I mean,
the and so
old infamy keyword needs to be reworked.
But he's not, because no one knows. Only the famous people know. Like the common people, he's
beloved.
Just renowned.
They rioted
the beloved boy
at
king.
Him.
The
common people you were talking about.
he's
just leave him.
He's unpopular. Joffrey was unpopular in King's Landing in the second book, right? But when he died in the third book, he had rebuilt his popularity primarily on the backs of the Tyrell influx of food, right? That was one of Marjorie, right? And it's more complicated. That's one of the things that I think is really interesting about the politics of Martin's book, is it hews a little bit more closely to like medieval waxing and waning of sort of the popularity of kings, right? When the food is plentiful, the king can be an asshole, but things are good. But, you know, when the food isn't as plentiful, oh my God, suddenly the king is this corrupt, decadent person with evil counselors. So
Roosh should be renowned.
I was going to say, I think somebody like Roosh is more
every
of
fucking
that.
Third Tyrell is renowned.
Like, there are people whose presence and their famous capabilities kind of uplifts and inspires people, and there are folks whose exploits and the fact that they're famous engenders fear. And
hey, man, I just looked up the word renown, the condition of being known or talked about by many people. Fame.
All right.
All your positive connotation is from First Edition.
All right. So can I say one quick thing, though, about making the reason why every single named character, it doesn't have renown, is this just a terrible design space, because what players want to play with is all these named characters, right? So if you give every single one of them renown, like, it just makes this, there'll be even more renown than the game.
And stop giving Tyrell renown on every fucking dude.
I agree. All right. I think we should talk a little bit about Martell, because I feel like Martell is, of the top four decks, the one that gets the least attention, but I think is actually really powerful and has, it has a fine QR rate, just slightly below zero at 0.05. It has some really good answers to a lot of the powerful decks, particularly Targ.
Tyrell.
Doesn't it struggle a little bit with Greyjoy still, too?
Yeah. Yes, often. But like, it has nothing to do to Tyrell.
Yeah.
Tyrell's just like, oh, yeah, I won, and Martell sits there and looks funny at it. Like, I could beat you if I could do something.
If I see Arianne and the money to bounce the new Arianne repeatedly to
I don't think the top Martell decks are running the new Arianne right now.
Yeah.
Especially since, what's his name?
Darkstar?
Oh. Ramsey.
Ramsey? Oh, yeah. Well, Martell Wolf is what you're saying is the top Martell deck.
I think that is.
I mean, Ramsey can be an answer to Mace, though. Like, a Martell deck.
If you can completely empty their board, sans him, yes.
Yes. Which can happen, particularly against Bitterbridge.
Yeah.
Like, that's easier. Like, if you can see Ramsey and Arianne early against Bitterbridge, you can do that.
Well, you can just, against Bitterbridge, you don't need Arianne for the combo. Jump in Ramsey.
Right. But
shrug.
Yeah. But a smart. I mean, if you set up Arianne, but whatever.
Yeah, I get it. It's just, it's not going to. I don't know. You can. It's just a really heavily uphill battle. You know what card is fucking phenomenal in Martell Wolf that everyone mocked me for saying was so good? The Highgarden. The, I don't remember what it's called. The one that bounces you if you only have one icon in a challenge.
Southron Messenger?
Yeah, Southron Messenger is really good in Wolf.
Southron Messenger is just really generally good.
Well, I mean, you play Night's Watch, so you're a little skewed. But, like, it, in Wolf, it is just straight up like, bye. I'm going to bounce that little shit. And now Ramsey.
Yeah. It's particularly good with Darkstar, right? Because Darkstar can make it happen.
That's a very solid boon. Martell's gotten a lot more flexible, or at least it feels like they've gotten a lot more flexible in removing that icon to make that effective. And
I actually think that Martell and Fleabottom are kind of where Fleabottom should be, because like, Martell does its bullshit of pulling the Southrun Messengers and the Dornish Spies out of their discard pile and putting them into play. But then generally, it then goes under the deck. And then you don't have to, it's not like every turn you're pulling a Dornish spy out of your discard pile and pulling an icon, right? So I mean, it's like easier to plan around. Right?
Depends on Orphan, but yeah.
Right. Yeah. Depends on Orphan, and there's obviously like interactions. But generally, I don't feel like Flea Bottom is super unfair when I'm playing against Martell. Like, it's like, okay,
really
they've
strong,
got this,
but it's balanced.
They've got this strong turn. I have to get them to do this strong turn so then I can set myself up to survive this turn and then move forward. Unlike Targ, where if you don't have Isle of Ravens or like the old bear or some other effect that messes with the discard pile, you...
Or a newly made lord, I suppose.
Yeah, newly made lord. But come on. They'll see another one. They always see another one. Or they dupe it. But yeah, occasionally you steal with Euron, right? Getting rid of Flea Bottom. You can definitely get into this like every turn. Oh my god, okay. Six strength Vicon that can do two challenges pretty easily. Cool. So you can do all the challenges you want and then defend my power challenge, defend against my military challenge. Like, it's can be very frustrating when that system gets going. So Isle of Ravens, Sandy is right. Great card right now. Because it can also be strong against Martell and Greyjoy, any Flea Bottom deck. So
I think that it's good for the game is, in general, a fault with the game, not a benefit of that card.
Yes, I agree. It's a bad card, but except in decks that are... Remember when we built that Targ... Was it Targ Rose or just Targ Fealty that was running rebuilding? And it actually became a thing in Targ for the first two or three packs.
Yeah. There just weren't that many good cards back then.
it just really wanted Dracarys. Conveniently, if you could see Dracarys like more than two times in a game, you know, you won playing Targ.
People had two good cards in their deck.
I think that's still a big edge.
Yeah. Well, now they have, you know, six terminal.
Seven
with Paws of Pride, right?
Terminal, but
no, wait, what?
Not terminal.
Crown of Gold.
So that's eight then, right? So three Drax, the Crown of Gold, and Paws of Pride.
Punishment.
That's eight. Wow, that's a lot.
I mean, plus Astapor and for some reason, Grey Worm.
Oh, yeah. I feel like Grey Worm has become a little less potent to me. I don't know. I've dropped him down to a 1x, but he's still there.
Yeah, you don't consistently see him anymore. Like, he's still really annoying when you see him, but...
I don't think he's quite that good.
No,
I think Dario is just a straight better card.
Well, he has the action economy, right?
Well, and yeah. And
Stand.
And Renown.
And Renown, yeah.
Don't underestimate that closing.
No, I agree. But I mean, Dario tends not to stick around. He tends to be powerful when I play against Targ, but not stick around, right? So,
yeah, because he's so fucking important that you throw everything at him to get rid of him.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I don't know why I just Valido Harris and their choice is like Danny Drogo,
I mean,
him, and they're like, hey, man,
if they were playing Grey Worm, guess what?
Yeah, oh yeah, Grey Worm would definitely go under there.
Okay. Well, all this Targ talk has me wondering about a different direction. We were talking about Martell, and we talked for a little bit about how they are maybe not handling themselves against Tyrell, and then we kind of drifted into Targ talk. But I'm curious about the Martell versus Tyrell matchup, because some of this stuff we've been talking about, like you know, the bounce and such, I'm not convinced is great against Targaryen, where they don't really care much if stuff is back in their hand. They're just going to chuck it for an effect. So,
not the return. It's Targ needs some kind of cards, and Martell is really good at saying you're not going to have any kind of cards. Like, Martell is very, very... bless you. Martell is really good at hand destruction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, in that case, you know, if you're looking at that Flea Bottom Second Sons stuff, you know, how's your average Martell deck disrupting that? Just back to the Isle of Ravens?
It's just you try and make it so that they can only really keep that out.
Mm-hmm. And
like they don't really have the economy to play usually, unless they get lucky, in which case, you know, fucking hey, right? Like, but unless they get lucky, they usually don't have the economy to just play Danny every turn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Martell's strategy is similar to the one I laid out with Targaryen, where you just got to outlast them and Martell is really well positioned to sort of prevent, you know, like they can't afford to play Dany every turn, so they'll have no position to close. So while they can stabilize and keep aboard Prisms with Second Sons, but some Martell builds, particularly ones that are running like things like Vengeance can really hurt Targaryen, right? Because they keep a limited board and they're not expecting to have to turn their Retal turn or their Blood of the Dragon turn that they had to throw their chuds to Blood of the Dragon into a, I'm suddenly suffering claim, right? It's...
I don't think Targ should be running Blood.
Well, most Targ players that I played against who aren't running Crossing disagree with you. But,
yeah, I know.
I mean, maybe that's the case. But so just outlasting them is really useful with Martell. Targ doesn't like icon control either because its icons can sometimes be scarce. And so that's also a really powerful effect, I think. So, yeah. I think Martell's good. I mean, Martell can just get burned to the ground. But, Targ also doesn't have location answers. And Martell has very powerful locations. So.
Okay.
Yeah, Targ, I mean, I guess it's less of a concern with the new guy, but Targ does not like Venomous Blade.
Mm-hmm.
Although it's less of a concern because the stupid 2-for-3 burn nude.
Mercy.
Yeah. But hitting the dragons is pretty good. So
hitting a dragon.
The other one's not 2 strength? 2? So Rhaegal's not, he's 3? No. Okay.
3-for-3.
Yeah, I know the other one's 4, but I just see Viserion more, so I don't know why. But
I don't know why.
People tend to have Viserion more in play. Rhaegal as well, but Viserion's the one that sticks out in my brain. When I see him, I'm like, okay, Drogon? Oh, yeah, Dany gets renowned. Okay. But
Drogon, I give no shits about. It's the other two I hate.
Rhaegal can be really annoying. The stealth is also super annoying, but.
The standard is where it's at for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and Martell Stag like that's the only prey on Targ because Targ hates dominance. They actively hate Dom Dex.
Yeah.
They always have.
Yep.
So.
Although Neil is kind of funny.
That it doesn't.
Hey. You know what's really hard to make consistent? Simone's shit.
Withering Cold?
What?
There. Yeah, it's really hard to be consistent with
mm-hmm.
that.
Maybe the right time for that is going to be once we actually have the wars to come in our grubby little fingers. When you've got that extra plot kind of sideboard, I think that's going to oddly free it up to be used more often.
We'll just see more of weird plots once that's out, so which I'm pretty excited about. There's some really interesting plots out there that just don't see play because you only because they're the 8th plot in a plot deck, but now that plot decks can go up to 10 is going to be interesting. I'm excited for that agenda.
Yeah, I'll be very, very curious.
I'm excited for that box.
The box, yeah. It's going to, I think, definitely push Martell. I mean, it'll be interesting. I think the problem is the rich are getting richer, though, so far in this cycle. So Tyrell got this ridiculous box. It doesn't really matter what cards it's gotten since
rich.
Then.
I see what you did there.
Greyjoy just got Asha. Greyjoy also got Old Wick. What else did it get? It got one another really good card. Kingsmoot, which we haven't even brought up. Kingsmoot decks are just they are Chekhov's card design. They are sitting there ready to, like, run away and drive people insane.
I mean, I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to give people.
Yeah, I don't want to either. But I'm almost certain. There's just like a part of me that feels like that Schoenthal and his crew are going to stay. There's going to be 4 Kingsmoot decks that are at minimum, bare minimum, sitting. Anyway,
man, Lily just left too.
Yeah. So,
this is bad.
Bad news for everybody. But I'm glad to see Dan. I'll be glad to see Dan. But anyway, so and to Greyjoy, and then Targ, of course, has had an amazing cycle as well. So, and then Martell's getting a box. So I don't really see a lot of room for Stark, Barra, Lannister, and Night's Watch to sort of burst the bubble of these 4 decks, short of there being secretly some busted Barra card or busted Stark card or something on the level of Haunted Forest coming for Night's Watch. But it seems like all those factions are on the downswing for Dany's design decision. I mean, Stark hasn't gotten a good new card, like a fantastic Stark card in forever. Barra's
the best two Stark cards they got were better for other houses.
For other houses, Bannerwolf. Lannister hasn't received a good card since the second cycle. Night's Watch hasn't received that strong of cards since the second cycle. It got some good cards in the third, but like power cards since the second. Bear has never received a good card since the core set, right?
Phenomenal.
But I'm joking. I'm joking for effect. But so I just don't like. It's going to take a lot of power creep in those factions to jump them up above where the rich are right now. So,
I mean, it's almost like that new Barra box that's coming would be really good.
Yes. I'm super excited for that Barra box.
I mean, it's the perils of the LCG design cycle. You know, the lag time between meta public outcry at factions and then design and development and printing is so wide.
Lannister is still suffering.
Yeah, but this is the blowback. These are the cards and cycles that would have been designed back when we were bitching.
No, I don't understand. Targ was never bad. They were like not the very best for like 3 weeks, and like they're still just like, what stupid card can we print next? Don't understand.
And Bear has maybe held on to that mantle longer than it should have.
Yeah, I feel like. They were afraid.
Guys, are we sure Barra is worse than Stark? I think Stark is more interesting, but I'm not sure they're better.
I think Stark slots into a place in the meta more clearly, right? Like, Stark is a good Predator deck. Like, if you were literally to show up at a tournament that, like, 60 to 70% of the field were all playing Targaryen, you play Stark and you just roll Targ, right? Like,
unless this is a big thing, they see an early crown.
Yeah, on Cat, it can be pretty bad.
It's just like, that was fun. Thanks for the game.
Frozen Solid can also, like, if you see an early Frozen Solid, that's the same thing. Like, the Targ player, like,
they actually have answers for that. You don't.
That's true enough. I mean, that's why a lot of Targ decks were in close call. To like reduce the variance of like, first turn crown on my Cat.
Everything.
Yeah. I mean, or Winterfell, like if you can somehow get Winterfell out the first turn, right? I don't know. But like, I feel comfortable in the Targ matchup when I'm playing Stark. And I always feel like, okay, if this is a field all of Targ, right? And there's a few other like factions that Stark can do that for, but it just loses so hard to like Tyrell. Sometimes, or can I don't even want to know what happens with Asha, but yeah, it just loses, right? I think Barra but Barra isn't even a very good Predator right now, and
I don't think that's true.
Who do you think Barra beats? Like, is like
Martell?
So maybe Martell, if the box is ridiculous, maybe Barra will slide in as like this. I'm seeing so much Martell.
Yeah, I mean, they run fucking, like, Melisandre is real bad for Martell.
True.
The big one? Or the small?
Yeah, the big one.
Well, pulling Ariane? Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense.
Again, I bet you Barra is probably pretty good against Targ. We just don't know it, because Barra sucks against everything else.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably like a Barra dragon. That I wouldn't be wouldn't be surprised if we see people play a Thrones War that is really strong because it combines like the Stand with like Robert and some other bullshit that or like Big Mel to like get several challenges off with her. Yeah, so there could be something there. Like, there's space to explore with Barra. But we'll see. I mean, we're going to see a ton. I mean, that's the most interesting thing about Thrones War for these underplayed factions, right? Stark, I'm sure, has 12 decks that'll be there. Night's Watch will have 12 decks.
Well, they'll have four decks.
Decks, yeah. But each deck will have some differences. I don't know how your team is going, but even the, like, when we're doubling up or tripling up or quadrupling up, there's still differences across, like, slight ones, but sometimes significant, but across, like, the draw deck. Some people like their tech.
Well, yeah, I think we've really hammered a lot of thoughts here about the store championship stuff, and we are probably nearing the end of the time we devote to that this week, but I think it's been a good discussion. Safely move to props and slops. All right.
All right. Well, I'm going to slop Kyle. Not realizing that tonight was the White Book episode. Kyle.
Wasn't he one of the people that we moved to Tuesday for?
Yes. He just messaged us and went, shit, that was tonight.
Well.
Whoa, Kyle. Whoa.
But he will never hear this, so we could say whatever we want.
I'm going to slop Bruno.
Tell me more.
He's a grumpy grump. Bruno's a grumpy grump.
Like, I just want to play with my Star Wars cards. Man, Thrones. Star Wars.
Maybe if Thrones had dice? I don't know.
No.
Oh, come on. You know they've got to be announcing, like, Thrones, Destiny,
Lord of the Just Lord. Waiting for it. It's too, like, I don't understand why they wouldn't. Oh, well, I know why they wouldn't.
Well,
I bet FFG. But, like, they...
I mean, their number of, like, Game of Thrones properties has gone down over time, not up. Right? They haven't...
Yeah, well, no, they're real. Roy, what? They're really... They, making money, like,
they
really bad.
Or they just released,
added a couple of those little bitty, like, party card games almost. Yeah, and then they did the Catan. Yeah. I think they just got scared off for a while because of how bad Battles of Westeros did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I have very little faith in the miniatures market, so I'm not surprised it didn't do well, but I get. Oh, I get why.
It doesn't surprise
me. I don't know. I mean, I think they assumed... Did it come out before X-Wing or after
before.
X-Wing?
Yeah.
Several years. Yeah. Before. I think...
There was still Stage by some fire, like, when it was going, probably, like, 2011 or 12? Somewhere around there.
Mm, yeah.
God, you're old.
Mm-hmm.
No, what?
I mean, it's true.
How are Greg and Daryl and Brett?
Goodish, I think. Busy.
I mean, the ish is definitely Greg. He's full of that.
Yeah. It was partially for Greg. I haven't seen him talk to him too much lately because he's driving all over the nation buying stuff. So he's staying busy.
So I will prop Riverdale, which Ala and I caught up on a bunch of episodes today, and it was very enjoyable, if sometimes uncomfortable, which is always what Riverdale is. So I love that show. So
I really want to watch it.
It's fun.
Has anyone watched End of the Fucking World?
No.
No.
I've heard it's really good, but I haven't had a time to get to it. I find it really hard to watch shows that are set in high school during the school year.
Yeah, I get it. The problem I have with that is, like, I'm just not in the headspace for a nihilistic teenage show right now. So, yeah, it's not really where my headspace is for entertainment. But the Murdoch Mysteries, that's another thing Al and I did watch yesterday. Canadian institution. Very amusing. So,
props the Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Ooh, I've been hearing a lot of.
It is awesome. It's too short, but it's really.
Aren't they doing another season?
Yeah, but, like, that's not out, so
that's true.
You can't watch it.
That's true. But it's not like Firefly or something, right? Where there's no more episodes coming or something.
Yeah. Also, The Good Place is one of my favorite shows ever.
Yeah, that's something we need to catch up on.
I'm not totally up to date. I'm like two episodes behind. But like that they can continue to be this clever and innovative in a network television show boggles my mind. It's like the exact opposite of Two and a Half Men.
Wow.
You mean that they are constantly changing the premise? It's more like it's the opposite of what's the Two and a Half Men is even on anymore? It's they just did a spinoff Big Bang Theory, right? Because Big Bang Theory is literally the same premise. Like Two and a Half Men changed more over its run, right?
They had to recast somebody. I mean, technically,
they had to recast somebody, and like the kid grew up, so he was, you know, like couldn't just do the same stories about him being 12 forever, right? So, but Big Bang Theory is just the same fucking thing every week for like 28 seasons.
I watched like half of one season. I'm like, this is funny. And then I was like, what am I laughing at? I'm never watching.
You're laughing
again.
At the laugh track. All right.
Yeah. Like I turned it off and then never went back.
I did not like that show. But Good Place, on the other hand, is an excellent comedy. And you should watch it.
It's brilliant.
It's very heartfelt too.
Yeah. A plus show. S rank show.
Ooh.
Oh yeah, I mean, and I like name drops so many philosophers. It's fun.
Yeah, Roy's extra nerdy, so it really.
Roy
really,
is cheaty. Is that what I just heard? Perfect.
Oh God, Roy is so cheaty.
I am very cheaty. I am the white cheaty. It is very true. So
oh, man,
we're very.
That is sad. That is so true.
Actually,
but you're not the first. But you didn't you call me cheaty in an episode of the. Of Second Sons, I think.
Maybe. Who knows?
I think you have
drunk. Will is also cheaty though.
No.
Yeah. Who would he be? He's got to be cheaty. I'm probably Jason, which is sad, but also probably true.
You're not oblivious enough to be Jason, Aaron.
What? All right. Kyle is Jason.
Kyle is Jason. Whoa.
It's still my favorite thing that's ever happened on any podcast.
It was pretty good.
I'm having a total mental block. What is crud? What is Jason's
Zhao Yu?
His girlfriend on the show currently.
Tahini?
Tahani.
Tahani. Tahani.
We gotta be careful with those spoilers, buddy.
My bad. Spoiler alert. Anyway, no, I was going to say, when Kristen was in L.A. a couple weeks back, she was walking around Venice Beach and actually walked right by the girl who plays Tahani. They passed just a couple feet away. So
nice.
She was pretty excited, but did not stop to bug her for an autograph or anything.
So I actually figured out who Aaron is on The Good Place. Then I'll try to do this relatively spoiler-free. I'll just say the actor. Aaron is Adam Scott's character when he guest stars for like 3 or 4 episodes.
Absolutely.
That's who.
That's
I am A, fine with that, and B, I will be almost any Adam Scott character ever, including the terrible one, because
I love Adam Scott. When he played the bully on Boy Meets World, or...
Oh, wow. We're going back. No, I was thinking the brother and step, the other brother in Step Brother.
Oh. I haven't watched that.
Although his character
in
Good Place is also
I didn't remember that was him.
I saw that by accident. Someone like made me, and I was so ready to hate that movie, and I really didn't. That's awful.
Well, there you go. That's something.
I don't usually like Will Ferrell very much.
I've come around on Will Ferrell.
Yeah, I don't hate him, but like he's been in enough things I like that I'm fine with him. But like I at that point really hate him.
I don't actively seek out Will Ferrell movies anymore, but I don't mind him. I don't know.
I like him. I like him. Although
he's no Kristen Bell.
No,
I just realized who I probably actually am on The Good Place. I'm not another cheaty. We can't have multiple cheaties. I'm definitely what's just in the
sure we can. You are not Kristen Bell.
No, I am definitely not. I wish. Okay. No, I'm the lady that's just in the okay place. I'm just middle of the
Oh.
The mediocre place. You know what, actually?
The porn addict.
Aaron, you are also actually very much like Kristen Bell, a male version of Kristen Bell in that way. Because you do a lot of really bad things, but in your heart of hearts, you mean well. You aspire to be good, like, and you want to be good, but you do very many bad things.
And secretly in love with you.
In this episode, in this episode, who have I said completely horrible things about?
Greg. Alex,
Roy, me.
God damn it! All right, fine. I was hoping for Ted Danson, but I'll settle.
I do like Ted Danson's character.
No, see, but Ted Danson.
You're a little.
Well, no, okay, it's talking too much, but we shouldn't talk about Ted Danson's character. That's fair. Like Ted Danson's character. That's even bigger spoiler than the one.
Will, you're Ted Danson in season one, but not season two.
I'm actually okay with that. I like Michael.
He is phenomenal.
Ted Danson is a very good comedic actor. Yeah. He always has been. Like, he was good in Cheers when he was young. He was good when he was on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Oh, I've never really watched Curb. I've seen episodes, but I've never sat and watched it.
The season where they do the producers, like where he. Like is starring in the producers, and he's also his wife. Gave him I think it's like a 60th birthday present that he can cheat on her, like sleep with one other woman. Is like
I've heard of this.
That is the best season of that show. Like I don't like Curb Your Enthusiasm. Some of the seasons I'm okay on, some of them I'm not. But that season is really really brilliant. Like it is very very funny because it's like tied to that very specific thing of them doing the play. And that kind of creates like a lot of really interesting like comedy. Then there's this subplot of him trying to cheat on his wife with her permission that is really funny as well. It's the best. Like if you want to just sample Curb Your Enthusiasm, that's the season to sample. Like season four.
I'm probably never going to.
Yeah, it's not something. So it's not like there's way better things to watch in my opinion than Curb. But if like you're like all right, I'm gonna know what it is. Yeah, like The Good Place. But Ted Danson's in that season and he's really funny. So.
Awesome and unsurprising because he's kind of awesome.
Yeah.
Also, one of the few really old white dudes who doesn't just come out and say random stupid shit all the goddamn time. So, hey, aces for you, Ted Danson.
Yeah, like props. Alan and I watched the genealogy show that Henry Louis Gates Jr. did. Then Ted Danson was on it. And Ted Danson like found out some bad things about his family's past and handled it in a very appropriate way. Unlike Ben Affleck, who told them that they can't say that his family owned slaves.
Oh.
Ben Affleck might just be a problem for lots of reasons, beyond being the worst Batman ever.
Wow. Now that's an argument. I'm not sure he was.
I don't think there's any argument to make. He wasn't Batman.
Well, okay, never mind.
I mean,
like, there was no.
You convinced me.
There was no character.
All right,
there was no character or development.
Definitely.
Terrible. Has Aaron entered the danger zone?
Boy, he has. That definitely closes a chapter.
That I've entered the dire wolf zone.
Well, I think like talking about Batfleck is closing the chapter on the book.
Of the ghost.
So the ghost.
No, because that's a dire wolf.
Closing a chapter on the career of Ben Affleck.
Closed this chapter of your Good Place podcast. I was going to say, that might be like a new record. 43 seconds, and I had to trim something you said.
It was a good one.
The Easter egg will be more fun, where I just say that it was a record, and then I leave everyone wondering what you said.